Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, March 17th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Redway Transfer Station changes its hours, and lawsuit launched for protections for the Western Ridged Mussel. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkyon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
A brief update on the shooting that occurred in Hoopa last week. According to the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office, the victim of the shooting succumbed to their injuries on March 13th. Humboldt County Sheriff's Office will now be seeking charges of murder for all three suspects involved in the incident. The incident is still under investigation, and the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office encourages anyone with information to call them at 707-445-7251. The Redway Transfer Station, operated by Recology Eel River on Conservation Camp Road in Redway, is changing its days of operation, according to a press release sent out by the transfer station today. Currently, the transfer station is open Fridays through Mondays to the public from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., with Wednesdays and Thursdays closed to the public and only open to commercial customers with pre-approved accounts. Starting April 15th, Wednesdays and Thursdays will be closed to everyone. KMUD News spoke with Justin Van Noy, utility worker at Redway Transfer, for more information about the change.
Our new hour changes are going to be starting April 15th. They come into effect. We're going to be closed Wednesdays and Thursdays at commercial accounts due to construction. We're re-ramping everything, and it's just going to be a beautiful, better for the community, easier, just basically better for the community and the environment here.
In the press release, the reasoning given for closing on Wednesdays and Thursdays was due to limited demand, though Van Noy states that it's due to construction instead.
I don't know too much. I know we're getting some new buildings going on. I know we are getting a new transfer area for a recycling center, a new office, new electrical. That's basically about it that I know so far.
Commercial customers will now have to bring their recycling in on the same days as the rest of the public. Cardboard, recycled paper, empty cans and bottles, unwanted paint, and household batteries can be dropped off at the transfer station free of charge. Garbage, sheetrock, construction and demolition debris, green waste, clean wood, appliances, and small amounts of metal can be dropped off for a fee at the transfer station. For any questions, the Redway Transfer Station can be contacted at 707-923-3944. Once again, that's 707-923-3944. Residents in Eureka near Albee Street may have seen multiple law enforcement units, including a Humboldt County Sheriff's Office armored vehicle and SWAT team, this morning. According to a press release from HCSO, all of the commotion was due to the agency's SWAT team, assisted by special services deputies and patrol, serving an arrest warrant related to multiple firearm violations. Here's more from the release. Quote, on March 17, 2026, at approximately 7:34 a.m., the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office SWAT team, assisted by patrol deputies and Special Services Division personnel, assigned to the Sheriff's Office UAV team, responded to a residence in the 1800 block of Albee Street in Eureka to serve an arrest warrant and to execute a search warrant. Upon arrival, deputies contacted and arrested 18-year-old Tyler Colgrove on the outstanding arrest warrant. Deputies then searched the residence pursuant to the search warrant and located a loaded firearm, end quote. Colgrove was booked for the following charges: felon in possession of a firearm, minor illegally in possession of a concealed weapon, manufacture/assemble firearm without serial number, and manufacture/import/sell/giveaway/possession of large capacity magazines. KMUD News reached out to the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office for comment, but did not receive a response by Newstime. Today, the Center for Biological Diversity notified the United States Fish and Wildlife Service that it intends to sue the agency for failing to make a timely decision as to whether the Western Ridged Mussel should be protected under the Endangered Species Act. Western Ridged Mussels can be found across the West Coast, as well as in Idaho and Nevada, and here in Humboldt, they can be found in the Klamath River Basin and throughout the Scott River, though populations have been declining rapidly. KMUD News spoke with Meg Townsend, a freshwater species attorney in the Endangered Species Program at the Center for Biological Diversity, for more information on the river mussels.
like all freshwater mussels, the western ridge mussel is extremely important for not only the health of the rivers, but health of entire ecosystems, because these mussels are filter feeders, and they are filtering the water in order to separate out the particles that they need to survive. But in so doing, they're cleaning and sort of packaging up the particulate matters that exist in streams, like pollutants, chemicals, pharmaceuticals, and pesticides. So they really are, they're really doing quiet work keeping our rivers clean. But sadly, they're disappearing from so many rivers in the West as we're facing this freshwater extinction crisis. They spend most of their lives, you know, partially buried in the sediment. They don't really move very far in their lifetime. They're a mussel. They might move up to a meter. So once they're in an area and they're doing the work cleaning the rivers, they really are so important, not just to the local area, but the entire river downstream as well.
The western ridged mussels used to be able to be found as far south as Southern California, though due to pollution, damming, and runoff, populations have been declining rapidly. Climate-driven droughts and invasive species have also been impacting populations.
So they've been wiped out across a lot of their historic range. These mussels used to go all the way down into Southern California and all the way up into Canada, but they've lost a lot of their southern range and a lot of the rivers where they live. They've been restricted from, you know, being more widespread to now only being in a handful of locations. And that's primarily due to damming of rivers across the West, poor water quality as a result of, you know, historic pollution, but also ongoing degradation of water through agricultural and urban runoff, as well as climate-driven droughts that have been plaguing the West, you know, in particular over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years. And really what we're seeing, too, with invasive mussels like the zebra and quagga mussels that have sort of taken over in places like Idaho, they're being outcompeted as these invasive mussels are allowed to take hold. And those mussels come into waterways on, you know, on boats and on other gear that people might bring with them from watershed to watershed.
The center initially filed a petition for the western ridged mussel to be protected under the Endangered Species Act in 2020 to the Fish and Wildlife Service, though still have heard no response. The service was supposed to respond within 12 months, according to the law.
We haven't filed a lawsuit yet. Well, we launched our lawsuit because, you know, an important part of filing a lawsuit under the Endangered Species Act is to give the agency notice of what the violation is so that they can take action and actually fix the problem before we file the lawsuit. So we've put them on notice that they're in violation of the Endangered Species Act because they haven't issued the legally required finding for the petition to list the western ridge mussel. And they're supposed to do that within 12 months from the date of the petition. And this petition was submitted in 2020. And because the Fish and Wildlife Service said that the western ridge mussel, you know, it seems like they may warrant listing and they needed to do a full status review, because of that positive finding, the service was required to make a determination on the petition within 12 months, so by August of 2021. But obviously we're, you know, almost 5 years from that date, and the service has failed to make any determination on the western ridge mussel's status as an endangered or a threatened species.
Criteria set by the Endangered Species Act requires the Fish and Wildlife Service to evaluate threats to habitats, species lives, habitat destruction and overutilization, and more to determine if said species can be protected under the Act.
The listing criteria is, you know, set forth under the Endangered Species Act, and it requires the Fish and Wildlife Service to evaluate things like threats to the habitat where the species lives, the habitat destruction, overutilization, so that would be, you know, collection or, you know, capturing. For the mussel, you know, these mussels may have been utilized in the past for their beautiful shells, but primarily, you know, what the main threat is to the mussels is harm to their habitat. So the four criteria that the Fish and Wildlife Service needs to evaluate for any species is habitat destruction, overutilization, disease or predation, and then sort of the inadequacy of any regulations that currently exist to protect the species. So whether or not the other laws at issue for the species are doing enough to protect the species from threats. And then there's a final category, which is other factors, and that typically includes things like climate change as well as invasive species. And so primarily for the western ridge mussel, those three, the habitat destruction and then, you know, the other factors that are climate change and invasive species are really the three that are driving this species out of all of the rivers where it has lived.
The center's notice of intent to sue gives the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service 60 days to comply with the law set by the Endangered Species Act and will sue in federal court if the service fails to act.
I think it's really important to know, particularly for a mussel like this, that, you know, although these mussels may be small and seem, you know, relatively insignificant due to the value that they have for entire freshwater ecosystems, you know, not only do other freshwater species depend on mussels, but so do humans, and they really are indicating the health of our rivers. And when mussels like the Western Ridge Mussel disappear from rivers, it's really a sign that the entire ecosystem is in trouble.
For more information about the Western Ridge Mussel and what the center does, the website is biologicaldiversity.org. Turning to Mendocino, assault in Willits results in arrest for attempted murder. Last Friday, March 13th, Mendocino County Sheriff's Office deputies responded to a report of an assault on the 27,000 block of Hawk Drive in Willits. Officers with the Willits Police Department were the first to arrive on the scene, and first aid was rendered to the victim from medical personnel, who confirmed that the victim sustained injuries consistent with strangulation and broken bones. KMA News spoke with Quincy Cromer, captain with the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office, for more information on the incident.
March 13, 2026, just after midnight, so about midnight 20 a.m., the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office was dispatched to an assault in the 27,000 block of Hawk Drive in Willits. The reporting person notified the Sheriff's Office dispatch that their neighbor, a 72-year-old female from Willits, crawled to their residence and requested law enforcement due to her being assaulted by a subject named Don Wiltsey, 38-year-old from Willits, California. Our original press release identified Wiltsey as a grandson to the victim. We have since determined that they are not biologically related, but they did live together at that address in the 27,000 block of Hawk Drive prior to the incident on the 13th. So officers with the Willits Police Department were first to arrive on scene, and first aid was rendered by medical personnel, who were able to confirm the victim sustained injuries to her face consistent with strangulation and broken bones in her lower extremities. The victim was examined and initially transported to a local hospital before being transferred to an out-of-county hospital for further treatment. So sheriff's deputies initiated an attempted murder investigation upon meeting with the victim at the local hospital. Willits police officers remained in the area where this incident occurred and observed Wiltsey walking around the driveway of the victim's residence where he also resided. Willits police officers detained Wiltsey pending further investigation by deputies, and while being detained, Wiltsey made threatening statements to a Willits police officer and a deputy sheriff regarding his intent to cause them harm. During our continuing investigation, sheriff's deputies learned that an argument occurred between the victim and Wiltsey, leading to Wiltsey physically assaulting the victim inside the residence. Wiltsey chased the victim into her bedroom and strangled her while making threats to kill her. The victim attempted to call 911, however, Wiltsey took her phone. The victim was able to jump from a window, which was approximately 9 feet from the ground, and upon landing outside, the victim crawled away from the residence and obtained further assistance from her neighbors to summon law enforcement help. During this continuing investigation, a search warrant was authored for the residence where deputies collected evidence consistent with the reported assault. Wiltsey was placed under arrest for attempted murder, assault with force likely to cause great bodily injury, assault causing serious bodily injury, criminal threats, elder abuse causing great bodily injury, threatening and resisting a peace officer with force, and removing a wireless communication device to prevent someone from summoning law enforcement assistance. Wiltsey was booked into the Mendocino County Jail, where he's being held in lieu of $1,205,000 bail.
The investigation is currently ongoing, and the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office requests that anyone with information regarding this case to call them at 707-463-4086 at option 1. In state news, NextGen Geothermal aims to greatly expand clean power. Public News Service's Suzanne Potter reports.
Experts are optimistic that improvements in geothermal technology will soon make it a cheap and plentiful power source. In the past, geothermal plants were limited to specific areas with underground volcanic activity like the Salton Sea in the Southern California desert. Now, next-generation technologies drill down to impermeable, superheated rock layers rather than depending on finding flowing hot water aquifers. People in the geothermal industry say this opens up many more areas, making the technology scalable. Stanford professor Roland Horn sits on the scientific advisory board of the company Fervo Energy, which plans to open a new geothermal plant in Utah this year.
people have taken new approaches to enhanced geothermal systems. By adapting technology from oil and gas, they've been able to reduce their drilling costs by a factor of two or three.
Right now, geothermal power supplies only 0.5% of the world's electricity, but that could rise to 15% by 2050, according to a report from the International Energy Agency. Enhanced geothermal injects surface water, not chemicals, then pipes the superheated water back up where it drives turbines to create electricity. Teams of scientists are also working on drilling techniques that can go around curves, which would allow more wells in a given area. Lev Ring is with Sage Geosystems, a company working on a pilot project near San Antonio, Texas. He says geothermal can be produced 24/7, so it can be more reliable than wind or solar.
There is enough heat on Earth to supply power to the whole humanity for thousands of years, but we need to perfect our techniques.
Experts acknowledge that enhanced geothermal systems can create a higher possibility of small earthquakes in an area, so the early facilities may need to be located in sparsely populated areas while the technology is improved. This story was produced with original reporting from Stephen Battersby for the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, U.S. allies balk at Trump's calls for warships in Hormuz, as U.N. officials say war doesn't produce outcomes that truth and justice can. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
President Donald Trump has been urging allies to join his Operation Epic Fury war on Iran. But so far, the response from key allies has ranged from "it's not our war" to "we can talk about it later." Trump is asking for help to protect oil tankers passing the Strait of Hormuz from Iranian attacks.
So we want them to come and help us with the strait. We have it in very good shape.
Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi says the strait is open for nations that are not at war with Iran.
It is only closed to the tankers and ships belonging to our enemies, to those who are attacking us and their allies. Others are free to pass.
Trump says he's asked roughly a half dozen other countries to send warships to reopen the vital strait, including Japan, South Korea, China, and several countries in Europe. Japan has laws limiting overseas military deployments, and Prime Minister Sanae Takaichi told Parliament, "We have not made any decisions about dispatching escort ships." South Korea says adequate time is needed for deliberations. China says it will not help in the strait, but Trump renewed his push Monday while downplaying the reluctance he's getting.
We strongly encourage other nations whose economies depend on the strait far more than ours. You know, we get less than 1% of our oil from the strait, and some countries get much more.
Trump has especially pushed European countries to help the U.S. keep the Hormuz Strait safe for oil tankers, although most of the oil that passes through the Gulf actually goes to Asian countries. European countries are not eager to join the fight until they know more about Trump's plans. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer says the U.K. will protect its people and work for stability in the region, but it's not likely to send a warship.
While taking the necessary action to defend ourselves and our allies, we will not be drawn into the wider war.
Germany's Chancellor Friedrich Merz said NATO is a defensive alliance, not an interventionist one. Stefan Cornelius is a spokesperson for the Chancellor.
Dieser Krieg hat mit der NATO nichts zu tun. Das ist nicht der Krieg der NATO.
He says this war has nothing to do with NATO. It is not NATO's war. He says the U.S. did not consult Germany before the war, adding, Washington said expressly at the beginning of the war that European help was neither necessary nor desired. But that lack of takers for warships in the Strait is not a big deal in the eyes of President Trump.
I don't do a hard sell on them because my attitude is we don't need anybody. We're the strongest nation in the world. We have the strongest military by far in the world. We don't need them. But it's interesting. I'm almost doing it in some cases, not because we need them, but because I want to find out how they react.
As Trump pursues his own form of diplomacy, United Nations officials continue to call for an end to the attacks. UN Chief Antonio Guterres said during a visit to Lebanon, there is no military solution. The UN's top climate change official, Simon Steele, says disruption of global energy supplies is being felt worldwide, adding fossil fuel dependency is ripping away national security and sovereignty and replacing it with subservience and rising costs. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization says the conflict is rippling through the global food system, with rising food and fertilizer costs. On a more local level, experts at the UN's Human Rights Council Monday discussed the plight of Iraqi civilians in the war, where some 3 million people have been displaced. The UN's Special Rapporteur on Rights in Iran, Mai Sato, condemned the more than 1,600 executions carried out in Iran last year, and also the attacks on Iran.
I have condemned the U.S. and Israel's attacks as unlawful under the U.N. Charter, last year and this time again. The strikes remain unlawful, no matter the assumed or stated objectives of those strikes. International law is not selectively invoked. It applies to all parties in all circumstances.
Sara Hossein is chair of the Independent International Fact-Finding Mission on the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Today, the Iranian people are caught between a large-scale military campaign by two countries, the U.S. and Israel, and ongoing repression by their own government in Iran.
She referred to the airstrike that destroyed a girls' school in Iran on the first day of the war, killing more than 168 people, mainly girls.
Against this backdrop, we are particularly concerned by public statements from U.S. officials suggesting that long-established rules of engagement do not apply in this conflict.
She says a core lesson of the war is that military action does not bring meaningful change.
There must be a firm commitment to pursuing justice and change through lawful accountability measures and not through violence. War cannot deliver the outcomes that truth, justice, due process, and transformative reparations can achieve.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Prosecutors in South Dakota have dismissed charges against an indigenous rights advocate, charges stemming from a 2022 incident against Nick Tilson, CEO and founder of Indian Collective, were dropped. In a statement, Tilson said, "My freedom was not granted by a judge, a jury, or the settler colonial court system. My freedom was won by the people, the movement, and the ancestors." Tilson faced more than 25 years in prison, originally facing charges of aggravated assault on a law enforcement officer and obstruction. Ultimately, the trial resulted in a hung jury. Tilson maintained his innocence throughout, saying it was an effort to watch an interaction between police and an indigenous member of the Rapid City community. Indian Collective spokespeople had contended the charges were excessive. In the same statement, representatives described them as, quote, blatantly politically motivated effort to silence a movement leader by criminalizing his actions. In response, Pennington County State's attorney writes, quote, the decision to dismiss the case was made after careful review and thoughtful consideration. The office adds they stand by the charging decision, saying while they believe the case was properly charged and presented, the jury's inability to reach a verdict was an important factor in evaluating whether further prosecution would serve the interest of justice. Alaska will receive about $1 billion from the federal government over the next few years to improve health care. The millions of that depends on the legislature passing several bills aligning Alaska with best practices for rural health care. Alaska Native people are much more likely to live in rural areas than other Alaskans. As Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra reports, a proposal to make it easier for out-of-state nurses to practice in Alaska is facing fierce pushback.
When you boil it down, Alaska Hospital and Healthcare Association head Jared Kosin says joining a so-called license compact is pretty simple. He says there would be a set of criteria nurses would demonstrate.
And if they do, then they are issued a license, and then they can practice in any states that use those same standards.
Proponents say joining a compact would help ease a nurse shortage across the state that's projected to worsen. Kosin says it may be simple to explain, but actually getting a bill passed to join the compact has been anything but.
It's just so snagged up in politics.
The last version of the bill was supported by most healthcare organizations in the state, but it was opposed by nursing unions. He says that created a toxic dynamic. And this year, there's new pressure on the legislature thanks to the Rural Health Transformation Program. When the state health department applied for the money, it told the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services the state would join the compact. The state's been directed by CMS to create compacts for other healthcare positions too: physicians, emergency medical services, psychologists, and physician assistants. The state doesn't know exactly how much money would be clawed back if Alaska doesn't pass all the required legislation, but a health department official wrote over email that a ballpark estimate is that millions of dollars is at stake annually, and tens of millions of dollars over the 5 years of rural funding. Shannon Davenport is a union leader and nurse. She says there are many problems with the nursing field right now, especially workplace safety. And she doesn't think the nursing compact is the solution to them.
It's not the golden goose. It's not the answer to everything.
Even so, most nurses support a compact. Almost 90% of nurses living in Alaska, according to a 2023 survey. The federal deadline to join the compact is at the end of 2027. In Anchorage, with additional reporting by Eric Stone, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters, Christopher Martinez, Suzanne Potter, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMA News is online, and you can find us on KMA.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605. Or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.